Hello, and welcome to another fine episode of the Tombstone Podcast. Podcast where we talk about video games, the video game industry, and whatever else we want. My name's Devin.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Zach.
And we are going to have a fine COVID-19 themed episode for you guys today. what games have we been playing while we've been stuck in quarantine and working from home, boys?
Well, I feel like largely we all have the same answers.
Yes.
Doom Eternal and Animal Crossing both came out same day. And I was kind of on a boat where I was like, I'm kind of meh about both. But then I started watching people play both and I was like, all right, I think there's something to this. And it's a really perfect little phenomenon that they're really good at cutting each other up. Like, it's really good to go from one to the other and back.
Yeah, that's basically all I've been doing, because I'll wake up in the morning, play a little bit of Animal Crossing, like play for a few hours, get some stuff done. You know, today I got materials for houses done today so that way people can move in, and then I just went and did some fishing and whatnot. Just did my regular rounds, and I was like, that's good enough for today. And then went and fucking slept till 6 o'clock. and then I've been playing Doom Eternal for a few hours now, and hopefully can get pretty close to beating it pretty soon. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I don't think it's incredibly long.
No, that from what I can tell, I think I'm probably at least halfway through the game, and I've only been playing for a few hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think I'm pretty close to. But my problem is that I love playing. I love playing on harder difficulties. So that's if I was playing on an easier difficulty, like just the normal difficulty, I think I'd be done by now, because I've spent a lot of time playing Ultra Nightmare, Is it Ultra Nightmare?
Not Ultra Nightmare. You're playing on the one below that.
What's the hardest difficulty?
Ultra Nightmare is the hardest.
Ultra Violence
is the one you're on.
Yeah. So it goes like Something Hurt Me Plenty, Ultra Violence, Nightmare, then Ultra Nightmare. And I'm playing on Ultra Violence, and most of the time spent is doing the same thing over and over and over again until I finally get through it, because I'm not that good at that game yet.
Yeah, but like it ramps up pretty quickly, and I mean, I'm on the Hurt Me Plenty because I just whenever I do my first playthrough of a game, I just kind of want to breeze through it and get the idea of it, and then usually doing the harder difficulty after that just comes super naturally. So that's my approach, is I'm doing Hurt Me Plenty, and then I'm probably going to go back and do Ultra Violence, and then I'm going to do Ultra Nightmare, just because it just kind of continues the difficulty curve. That's why I'm kind of hoping it's a short game, so I can play it multiple times in all the different difficulties.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm always usually pretty excited for new games coming out that I enjoy is whenever I beat it, I can go and watch the speed runs of it and kind of get some just more enjoyment out of it, more entertainment out of it. So I'm hoping to, because Distortion 2 has been speed running it.
Yeah,
so I'm waiting to beat the game and then probably watch some speed runs of it too. Zach, other than Animal Crossing and Doom, what have you been playing? You've been still playing some Final Fantasy?
Yeah, every now and then I get on, do like my daily dungeons, do a few quests, and then hop off again just to keep up with it, I guess. I'm ahead of everybody else in our little play group, so I'm not too worried. But yeah, it's just kind of log on, play a bit, and then get back to Animal Crossing.
Yeah, you've been like, y'all been playing all day long, every day.
I mean,
it's pretty crazy. Like, I because there's not that much to do on a like
on a single day.
I fish, and then I fish some more, and then I fish even more.
Yeah. I mean, that's all you've been doing is just fishing and going on expeditions, right?
Just stocking up on resources and then just fishing for money because it's the
I had a
easiest thing
really
to do.
shitty expedition today that I went on. It was
I
like
have
just
a
this small little
lot
tiny
of like,
island.
yeah.
And it had pears, and I have pears, and I'm getting tired of fucking pears everywhere I go. I haven't found another island with anything different. Like,
So
I
it's
typically
80% of the
that's
time, yeah, 80% of the time it's going to have your flowers and your fruit. It's rare that it will have something different, but
Well, that
yeah.
is dumb. Anyways, well, other than those two games, I've also been playing Stardew Valley, which that's kind of slowed down with Animal Crossing coming out. But I think I'll probably rotate Animal Crossing and Doom and what was it, Stardew.
Stardew.
I'll probably keep rotating those. That way, I don't get bored of anything. Been playing, still playing League every day, playing Call of Duty every other day, just trying to rotate stuff so I don't go stale in this quarantine. I haven't left my place since Thursday. Yeah, Thursday. So I've been home for 5 days in a row now. So it's nice. It's nice. I hope everyone's out there being safe, doing the social distancing and staying home if you can. But today our topic is going to be A Link to the Past. This is my favorite Legend of Zelda game, and I believe it's the one that I started playing first. I want to say this was my first Legend of Zelda game. I played it on the Game Boy Advance, or yeah, Game Boy Advance version. It came with also Four Swords Adventure, right?
Yeah, Four Sword.
Yeah, I never really did get to play Four Swords because I never had Four Swords to play with.
Yeah, well, you
Because
need four people
you
with a
need
copy of
four.
that game and a link cable
Yep.
for all four. Oh, and four Game Boys.
Yeah. So it, that never. Anyways, Link to the Past is what we're talking about today. And then also the version that I played was the one that came with Four Swords Adventure, and I never got to really play it because, like I mentioned, it's a hassle. So I remember playing this as a small little lad and it taking me forever to figure out what to do in this game just because it's so open world. It's a very open world game, but it's also very gated in what you can do, and it's very linear in what you're supposed to do in order to go through the game. And the way that this game works, I think this was the first one to do this idea of two different worlds. So you go through the game, and some wizard captures Zelda and, banish her to the Shadow Realm or whatever the fuck he does. And you have to go and get the Master Sword, the sword that binds evil or whatever they call it in that game.
The
And
Sword of Evil's Bane.
the Sword of Evil's Bane. And you have to go and grab three different pendants. You have like the Strength Pendant, the Courage Pendant, and the Sand
Wisdom.
Pendant. I don't know.
Wisdom.
It's the pieces of the
Wisdom.
Triforce. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I
Sand.
know the one in the desert is the sand one, so
Right.
I think sand is knowledge, right? Because it's time and whatever, and time and wisdom and something like that. And you can only go through those in a certain, like you have to go to the one in the east first, then you have to go to the sand one, and then you have to go to the one in Death Mountain. There's no way to do those in any other order, because the first one you get the Pegasus boots, and you get the with the Pegasus boots you have to go and get the Book of Madora to get into the Sand Temple. And from the Sand Temple you get the Titan's Gauntlet, the Power Glove. The Power Glove lets you get onto Death Mountain. So like that's 1, 2, 3. It's linear. That's it. That's all you get. And then you go and get the Master Sword, go beat at Agamemnon or whatever his name is.
Aghanim.
Aghanim, yeah. And then he, with his last final breath, does something to send you to the Dark World. And that's where this game really starts to open up with its exploration, is that you have two different worlds that you can go between. You have the Dark World and the Light World, the regular world. And you can switch between these. You can switch between dark to light with the magic mirror. And the magic mirror leaves a little spot behind that lets you get back to the Dark World. Other than that, there's these little tiles throughout the world that transports you to the dark, like throughout the overworld that transports you to the Dark World. So you can get easily between the dark to light, but the light to dark, there's specific places that you usually have to go. And that's where this game really starts to mess with your head about, like, okay, where the hell do I need to go and what is where? And the exploration in this game is pretty top notch. I still get lost in Death Mountain. Death Mountain is wild. It's insane. There's so many different ledges that you can drop off to lower ledges that bring you into the tunnels, that bring you somewhere else, and it'll bring you all the way, you know, to the eastern side of the mountains, and then you drop off another ledge, and then, you know, it brings you back to the top, and you're like, where the hell am I? It's so fun. I haven't played in like 2 weeks, but I've gotten through the game and I've gotten to the final fight with Ganon. So I've almost beaten the game just because I wanted to prepare for this episode. So what are y'all's thoughts on this game? Have y'all played this game, and what do you remember of it?
Oh yeah. I've played it, I've actually only played it through entirely one time, because I never owned it as a kid. The first Zelda I ever played was Wind Waker, you know, so I had to go back and play it. And the one thing on the note of exploration, that's the thing that really, really stuck out to me, is sort of the exploration, because in other episodes we've talked about the concept of, you know, utilizing the verticality. And even though this is a two-dimensional game, it actually takes a pretty good advantage of a pseudo third dimension, right? Because there is like verticality as coming toward the screen. You can get higher. So it has that in its level design, but it also has that light world, dark world thing that you were mentioning. And I think, like, technically, in like a computer science or mathematical sense, it's technically like a fourth dimension. Granted, it's only binary in that fourth dimension, but it's, you have like this 3D space, and it, in this exact 3D point, links to this other point in 3D space in another world. And the way it's utilized, particularly in Death Mountain, like you were saying, it's super fucking winding and knotted and interwoven. It's just fucking nuts how, like, condensed it is. And, like, compared to, like, Breath of the Wild, this is kind of what I thought, or I wished Breath of the Wild would be more like, in that it's, like, a very tightly designed and more cleverly laid out world, rather than just big expanse.
Yeah, because I think that's my biggest gripe with Breath of the Wild, is that, yes, it is fun to explore and it's a very beautiful game, and there's a lot of different environments, and the environments affect you differently, and there's a lot of cool exploration, but it's mostly surface world exploration. There's not a lot of going underground and exploring caves and exploring dungeons, because like we've mentioned, there's not really dungeons. There's the shrines, but then the shrines are very much like, here's a little challenge to get this reward. And in this game, here it's like, here's a cave to get to another cave to get to something that you better have this item for to get to a heart piece. You know, it's mm-hmm. like there's these layers to where you have to realize, oh, I need to come back with the hammer so that way I can get through here. So that way then I can get to this, the next part of whatever this is. Or you're like, hey, there's a heart piece like up on that ledge. How do I get up on that ledge? Is there a way all the way around, or is there, do I have to drop down? Do I have to, there's plenty of times where you have, in order to get on that ledge, you have to, you know, be in the dark world and then switch over to the light world because the terrain changes. And the terrain is like changing between worlds is oftentimes part of a puzzle to get to wherever you need to go. It's great. I don't know. Well, I do know of other Zeldas that have done this because you have, was it Link Between Worlds?
A Link Between Worlds is pretty much a straight, it's almost a straight port of A Link to the Past. It just has some small differences in how you navigate and has that wall fusion mechanic. It's also an excellent game and it has a lot of this similar design to it.
Yeah, I've played a little bit of it. I didn't actually beat the whole thing, but I don't remember. Do you switch between worlds or is it just the painting thing? Like being able to go on the wall.
Yeah, and that one you switch between worlds. I don't think you get the mirror, but you do have like little cracks in the wall that you can slip into, and then you go into the other world.
Yeah, it's a lot more limited. You don't do it as often as you would in A Link to the Past.
But yeah, it's just used. Yeah, you just pop into the dark world, and you're just doing dark world things, and then, all right, cool, well, I'm going to go back to the light world, and you pop back and do the light world. Yeah, you know, so that particular component is weaker, but still an excellent game.
Okay. Yeah, it's been a while since I played it, and even then, I didn't play too much of it. So exploration is pretty great. The thing is that, again, like I mentioned, the dungeons are pretty linear in the order that you have to go. So like I said, you had to collect 3 pendants in order to get to the Master Sword. And the 3 pendants were basically, here's 1, 2, 3, and there's no way to sequence break them through normal gameplay, like standard gameplay means. And then whenever you get to the Dark World, after Aghanim takes over, well, sends you to the Dark World and takes Zelda, blah, blah, blah. So you have to find the 8 handmaidens. And they're locked away in dungeons as well. Whenever you open up your map, the dungeons are literally numbered 1 through 8. And this is basically the recommended order to do the dungeons. And oftentimes, there's no other way to do the dungeons in that order, in any other order. Because again, they're usually, most dungeons are gated by needing certain items in order to get through them. Like the hookshot is used pretty regularly throughout all of them, and the hookshot is gotten from I forget what that one is, but I believe the first dungeon is also like there's no other way to get anywhere because you either need the hammer to get to the rest of the world or you need you need the hookshot to get to the upper part of the dark world, and you need the, you need the hammer to get to the southern half as well of the dark world because you need to get to a portal block in order to switch to the dark world to get to the water dungeon and stuff like that. So the game is pretty linear, and I know that Like talking from, here's the original game. The original game, there's so many different ways that you can go through it, and the items are mostly there to help you. You know, like the bombs are just kind of there to help you. The boomerang and the bow and arrow, like those are all just items to kind of help you. But in Link to the Past, those items, well, the bombs are just kind of there, But those items are actually there as gated mechanics to kind of like guide you along this adventure. And I don't have a problem with it. I think it's still a very fun game and it's very enjoyable. And it actually has a decent amount of replay value, especially whenever it comes to like, oh, I'm just going to beat the game. And then it's like, well, let me sit here and scour the world and try to find where all of these heart pieces are, all of the items are, because there's definitely a bunch of items that are optional that you do not have to get. The ice rod is optional.
The ice rod you actually need to find in order to fight a boss, but you don't find it in a dungeon, which is something I found very interesting.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You do need it for one of the bosses. I forget.
But it's just in a cave, and you have to go out and find it and bring it to that dungeon. And I think the fire rod is in a dungeon, but you need the fire and the ice rod to beat that boss.
Yeah, the fire rod is in. Nah, I forget which dungeon. It might be the. No, it's not the Death Mountain one. But there's the cape. There's the. I think the rod of whatever. No, that's not optional. Is that optional? I forget if that one's optional. There's a rod that summons a block. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not optional, but I think you can get it. I think that's one of the items that you can get, or like that's from one of the dungeons that you can do earlier than a certain dungeon. And there's a puzzle. There's a puzzle in one of the dungeons that, like, if you wouldn't got the rod early, it makes that puzzle super easy. Because otherwise, you have to go all through the dungeon just to push a block down a hole, just to push the block onto the button. And if you have the rod, you just summon a block on the button.
Mm-hmm, yeah, there's a slight bit, like the slightest bit of sequence breaking you can do. Like the number one dungeon in the Dark World, that's you pretty much have to do that one first. But it's like the middle ones you can do kind of out of order, and then like the two last ones I think you can do out of order. But like you can't just do it in any damn order, which is something I thought A Link Between Worlds did better, where it had It had the rent item system where you can get any item you needed or you thought you needed and just go anywhere. So you could do the dungeons in any order, which there are trade-offs to that, because with like you're saying, like a lot of people have a problem with like, oh, I can't go here, I can't go there, I can't go there. Yeah, it kind of sucks that it's linear, but also it challenges a part of your brain that basically asks of you to just kind of remember where things are and go, oh, I ran into this obstacle over here, so when I have something that can handle that, I need to come back. And like doing that on a, you know, whole map, like the whole world map sort of scale, is an interesting problem to solve. So there are strengths to both, and I think that in A Link to the Past in particular, it really shines. It does a pretty good job because it's actually fun to look around. Whereas in some other Zelda games I've played, you know, if I know that going over there is pointless right now, it's like, I'm not even going to waste my time. Whereas in Link to the Past, it's like, well, I'm going to go over there because there might be something here or something there. It's more interesting to explore and run into those obstacles and then like store them in your memory.
Yeah, because it's a lot of the times it feels like you're solving puzzles by being like, oh wait, I now have this thing. I remember something back in Kakariko Village that looked like it. You know that now that I've used this item, I've seen something just like this in Kakariko Village that I can go and use this item on and see what's out there and see what the item is behind this, you know, gate that I can now basically bust open. It feels like a lot of times it feels like a puzzle adventure game where, you know, there's riddles hidden throughout the game and there's hints throughout the game, and again, like unlocking more and more tools in your arsenal unlocks more and more of the world and just makes the world more vibrant and more like there's just so many different routes by the time you get to the end of the game that if you need to get from one spot to another, there's like 8 different ways that you can go. I mean, I know at that point it probably seems eh, but I think the game is I like the way that they handle it. I like the way that they handle exploration. But yeah, let's break for ads real quick, and then we'll come back and we'll, I guess, critique it a little bit more, and because there are some gripes that I have with the game. But we'll be right back. And welcome back from those delicious, delicious ads. We're going to continue our discussion of A Link to the Past, and I'm going to bust it wide open with some criticisms that I have of the game. And one of the main criticisms that I have while playing recently, I don't know if this might be just this might not be appropriate because I was playing on an emulator and I was playing with an Xbox controller, so I'm not playing with original hardware and I'm not playing with an original controller. So take this, I guess, with a grain of salt. But I think one of the things that I notice is that you have 4 cardinal directions that you can swing your sword, which sucks. But you can move in 8 directions. So it makes it a little bit tough that you can like go at a 45 degree angle at an enemy, but you can swing to the right and miss them and swing and like, but you have to like step up a little bit and then swing up. So combat can be a little bit tricky at times. And it seems like you should be able to hit an enemy when really you don't. And that's because the combat is only in 4 cardinal directions. I wish that the combat was in 8 directions, like your movement. I don't know why it would have been made with, you know, the 8 directions of movement, but only 4 directions of combat.
It was kind of a system limitation because they could only have so many sprites, so they drew the sprites in the 4 cardinal directions, but you can still move in the 8. Because when you move diagonally, you're still facing up, down, left, or right. Like, you kind of just drift to the side as well as going up, let's say. So it feels to me, at least, that it was a system limitation. Other games since have fixed it, and you can not only look in 8 directions, but attack in 8 directions as well. But that's on, you know, future hardware.
Yeah, I think that gripe is more of like it's just one of the aspects that hasn't aged in the game. It does make it difficult at times to do combat. Because sometimes, you know, you feel like this lines up perfectly, but, you know, it's just slightly off and you often have to get hit in order to, and then like reposition and then hit whatever you're trying to attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That kind of gets into one of the main issues I had, which was the combat. And for me, it was two particular things in addition to that thing. So it's like, yeah, you can only face one direction and all of that. But when you swing, you don't swing in a full 180 degree arc like later games do. It's like it'll be completely to your right, and it'll swipe to like 45 degrees to your left rather than 90 degrees to your left. And I think that like that asymmetry kind of messes with the combat in a lot of scenarios, at least in my opinion, because it's like, all right, which, like, I'm coming down diagonally at this enemy. Is it better for me to face right and like drift down toward them in attack? Or is it better for me to face down and drift left toward them to get a better attack? Like, you have to think about which way is better to face in order to land your hit. And I don't know, to me, like, that combat, fighting more complicated enemies is frustrating, particularly, and this is getting into my second thing, fighting any of the knights and whatnot.
Yes, where it's, yes.
Basically, the task is to, like, drift slightly to the side so that their sword will miss you, but you can swipe and hit them. It's more of a positioning thing than a timing thing. And I just, this is not the game you go to for meaty or complex or particularly interesting combat. It's just not this game's strength. This game's strength is exploration, way, way more so. So the combat is a bit lackluster, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree that the combat's... is at times it's a task, especially when you have to fight some of the bosses, mole something, which is the caterpillar thingy, the snake thingy,
Molgera,
Moldrotha,
Moldorm,
whatever.
It's, I don't remember
the thing. We know what you're talking about.
It's the one with that you have to hit its tail. That one. That could be a pain in the ass whenever it's moving in like circular patterns and you can only attack again in four cardinal directions. So it just, and again, like you said, your swing arc is more like, it's not like all in front of you. It's not directly in front of like where you're swinging. It's more to like the right of your character is what you hit. So again, yeah, lining up shit can be a little bit of a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Some enemies I think really are well suited to the simplistic combat. Like bats are easy. The little like shell dudes that you know, you can hit them and it bounces you away, but it bounces them away as well. Like those guys are interesting. The Stalfos are interesting because it's like, oh, you got to kind of chase them and corral them into a corner while being like bombarded by other shit. And like enemies like that are fun. It's like, it's more of those like really like straight up knight fights that it's like, all right, it's not working as well in this more complicated fighting scenario.
Yeah. And another one that I can think of is there's these sprites that bounce around the room and you have to use magic powder them and they'll turn into fairies. Again, it's moving in like this diagonal pattern usually, and you have to hit it in four cardinal directions. So it can sometimes be difficult to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite enemy to fight? And like what is your favorite design wise, your favorite design enemy?
If I had to omit bosses, I'll say that probably my favorite is the ball and chain guy. Those guys are pretty interesting because it's not complicated, at least in my opinion, it's not complicated to hit them. The complication is in you as Link avoiding the big spiked ball. Which, you know, moving isn't that hard. It's the, you know, coordinating which way you're hitting is the hard part. So I think that like those are like a pretty good example of a more complex enemy that can be handled pretty well by the system in place.
What's your favorite boss then?
Oh, well, now I'm trying to think back to the bosses because, like I said, I've only played it once. I think the one that stuck out to me, I think it was probably the one that I mentioned where it goes with the fire and ice arrows. I just thought that like requiring the fact that it did require the ice was interesting, but also was just kind of like a fun sort of battle. It wasn't frustrating to me at all.
Yeah, no, that one is actually a pretty easy boss, because I mean you just have to, I think you had to hit like each head like four times with like the fire and ice rod respectively, And then the middle boy, he turns into like a serpent that you just have to attack like his weak spot on his body a few times. And like other than that, it's a pretty easy boss. It's just you got to learn its attack patterns and what it can do. It sucks whenever, because the ice boy, the ice head can lay ice on the ground. And it just persists throughout the fight. So yeah. Ice in this game, you slip and slide on, and it just makes moving difficult. So you're sitting there trying to like move around this boss because it moves in like a circular pattern, always kind of like towards you. And so you have to kind of like get it to do like a, you have to move in a certain way to kind of like get it to like do a wide arc around you in order for it to reposition to hit you. And that's your, you know, that's your moment to attack it. And then you hit the ice patch and it just fucks your day up.
Yeah,
it's not too good. I think what is my favorite boss? Probably the sand boys. There's the sandworms that they burst up through the ground and like they go through the air and then go down, and yeah, like, so whenever they come up, they launch rocks at you, and you have to, there's the first fight, there's three of them, and the last boy shoots out like 16 rocks in a circular pattern out, and it's just like you have to learn the pattern. It's not a hard fight at all, but it's a really enjoyable one, because sometimes you can get it to where they all pop out at like around the same spot, and you can hit all of them with the spinning attack, and it's very satisfying.
Yeah, that kind of highlights an interesting thing about this game, as opposed to probably what got codified in Ocarina of Time, and that's in this game, you don't really always use the item on the boss. In fact, it somewhat rarely even happens. Like I mentioned with mine, it's like, well, you fight him with a item you get elsewhere entirely. The one you just mentioned, you just fight with your sword. And I like that any item that you have could be useful at any given point, right? So like a boss battle, it's not like, oh well, I got the fucking bow in this one, so it's gonna be the bow. It's like, well, it might be the bow, but it might also be like, I don't know, bombs, or
you just hit it with your fucking sword,
the quake medallion. Yeah, yeah, or your
most
sword.
Of the time, like, you can just hit it with your goddamn
any combination
sword.
Of things. Yeah, and it, like, it could be anything, and you know, a lot of times it's your sword, but like the fact that it's not so cut and dry, it's not, I walk in, I know I'm going to use the arrows because I got the arrows in this dungeon. You know, I like that level of surprise, I guess.
Yeah, in the dungeon that you get the hammer in, you can, you come up to against this like big lizard thing that has a mask on, and you have to break its mask off in order to hit its face. And you can use the hammer to do that, or you could just throw bombs at it and
be
blow the...
Be a lot safer with bombs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just interesting that they have multiple ways to do some of these bosses. And again, your spinning attack, your sword spinning attack's usually pretty good. it's usually where it's at. But I think my least favorite boss from this game is the moth boss, the moth boy. I don't know what he's called. I just call him the moth boss or moth boy, whatever he is. Mothman, and that's because you have an ever-changing platform. Like you're fighting on a platform that moves in different directions, and it's just always changing. You also have spikes that surround the platform, and the spikes come at you while you're also fighting the boss. So it's the most annoying fucking fight, because you have to fight the terrain and the boss at the same time. And it's just like, you gotta be quick about it. It's like, I think you gotta get three or four spinning attacks in to kill it. So if you know what you're doing, it's pretty easy, but like, boy howdy, it can be annoying, because you better bring fairies with you. which I think,
oh yeah,
I think that's like a really good aspect of this game, is like the whole fairy stuff, where you can have, because you can get bottles pretty quickly in the game. Like if you get, you can go buy the first bottle, get the second bottle, like your first visit in Kakariko, you can get two bottles. And then whenever you go get the flippers, you can get your third bottle. And then I can't remember where the fourth bottle is gotten from. I think it's gotten from Death Mountain.
Yeah, when you lead the chest back to the...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the chest. It's, so you lead the chest from... it's the dwarves shop in Dark World. You lead that back to the normal average guy that hangs out by the desert. I think another gripe that I have with this game is the way that it handles its difficulty curve, because you're in your overworld, I think everything might do like half a heart to like two hearts of damage. I think two hearts is like as much damage as something does in the light world, in the regular world. And then in the dark world, you have things that do one hearts, two hearts, four hearts, and you don't get the blue mail until the Ice Palace, and you don't get the Ice Palace until you get the Titan's Mitt, and the Titan's Mitt is, I think, gotten from the Misery Mire, which you need... No, it's, but it's somewhere like, it's probably like halfway through the Dark World stuff, maybe a little bit after halfway, when you finally get through the Ice Palace and you can get the blue mail and finally get your damage cut in half. And then you get the red mail in Ganon's Tower, I believe, which by that point, all you have to do after you beat Ganon's Tower is just go beat Ganon. And Ganon still does like four hearts of damage. It's really ridiculous. Yeah. He's a big beefy boy that slaps hard.
And that kind of brings up something that I'm aware of. And this is a problem throughout most of the Zelda games. And that would be that basically at the beginning of the game, you start with three hearts. And starting with three hearts is like, oh, I can only take like a few hits and I'm going to die. But like toward the end of the game, you've probably got, you know, maybe you don't have the full 20, but even if you have like 13 to 15 hearts, which is not too out of the ordinary, you're just a fucking titan at that point. Like you can't die pretty much. And, you know, getting the... In the earlier games, getting the blue mail and the red mail makes it even easier. And it's like this reverse difficulty curve thing that's like, it's so hard in the beginning of the game because you die in like two or three hits from like big dudes. But then like toward the end of the game, you can take like 10 hits. And it's just very strange. It makes sense that you're like powering up, but like nothing else powers up with you, really.
Yeah, because you also have your sword that you have. So you get your base sword from your uncle, then you get the master sword, then you get the tempered master sword, and then you get I forget what the last one's called, but like there's like four different swords that you get, and they all do different amounts of damage, and if you don't have certain upgrades at certain points of the game, it's pretty difficult to get through. Those sword upgrades are definitely very worth it. Also, speaking of upgrades, this game has the upgrades for your bomb pouch and your arrow pouch. And in order to upgrade your bombs and your arrows, you have to go to the fairy fountain. It's the light world spot where the Ice Palace is. And you go in, you go to the fairy fountain, and it's like, do you want to throw some money in? And you're like, okay, you can throw in 5 or 10. It's like, all right, I'll throw in 10. And then nothing happens. So then you leave, you come back in. It's like, okay, do you want to throw 5 or 10? It's like, all right, I'll throw 10 again. So you have to do that 10 times. Then the fairy comes out and she's like, yo, what up? I can upgrade your bomb pouch or your arrow pouch. It's like, okay, cool. Let me get that arrows or whatever. So then you leave and you come back and it's like, okay, do you want to do 25 or like, do you want to do like 10 or 25? And it's like, oh, fuck, let me do 25, I guess. Do that 4 times. It's like, hey, what do you want to upgrade again? And you come back again and it's like, do you want to do 25 or 50? It's like, okay, let me do 50. So then it's like, if 50 is as high as you get for your donation count. So you can only donate 50 at a time. So every time you want to upgrade, you have to go in and out twice. And it's the slowest fucking process ever because you can get all the way, you can carry up to like 50 bombs and 70 arrows. So the bomb upgrades is 5 at a time. So you start at 10, right? So you 40, so that's 8 upgrades for your bombs. And then it's also 8 upgrades for your arrows because you start at 30 and you can get up to 70. So that's 1,600 rupees. Mm-hmm. That's like, so like 50 different trips because it would be 32 if you could just donate 50 every time. But it's like the dumbest thing. It's like, why not just, okay, I know the process. I know what's happening here. Just let me come in, donate 100 rupees, get my upgrade, leave, come back in. Like, let me just do it 100 at a time. So that way I don't have to waste all goddamn day doing this. Oh my God. It took me like 15 minutes, 20 minutes to get everything upgraded.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's just kind of speaking to how old of the game this is. Like, for one thing, that's kind of cryptic because you just go to the fountain. And it's like, how much money you throw? And it's like, why am I throwing in money? And you throw in money and then nothing happens. And you have to do it 10 times at least to see anything happen.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, fuck. And then at that point, it's just like, do that over and over and over and over. And it's like, that's just kind of the game showing its age at that point.
Yeah.
Just being like, we programmed it to work like this. So you just kind of have to deal with it.
Yeah. You know? There's some other and cool
like,
things.
Things like that exist, but it's all right.
Yeah, because there's also some other cool fairy fountains. There's one that upgrades your boomerang, and then also upgrades your shield to the red shield, which blocks fireballs. But you also have to know where it is. It's in the Zora's domain. And you also have to know that this is the one that you need to throw. Because it just says, hey, do you want to throw an item in? And you're just like, fuck it, sure, yeah, I'll throw something in. And if you're just throwing in random stuff, like say you throw in your boots or whatever, it's just like the fairy comes out, is like, hey, did you drop this? And you're like, yeah. And she's like, well, I'm gonna give this back to you. Try to be more careful next time. But yeah, if you throw in,
you just have to throw everything.
Yeah,
in.
If you throw in the boomerang, she's like, oh, did you drop this? It's like, oh, I appreciate your honesty. I'm gonna give you something better in return, and you know, she upgrades, she upgrades your stuff.
Yeah, I particularly like the one, and it might be the very same one. I might be remembering it weird, but there was one that like you walk up to and you either drop something in or you just hit A by it. And it's like, hey, did you drop the golden bombs or the silver arrows? And if you tell the truth and be like, no, I dropped neither of those in, she's like, oh, well, like, thank you for being honest, blah, blah, blah. And then she gives you something. I just thought that was really interesting.
I think that is the one that gives you the silver arrows. Because it's the one in the
the
pyramid.
Tell the truth,
which,
and then
so you, for that one, you have to get to a certain part of the game. I think you have to get to like the last two dungeons, and your house in the dark world. If you go in there, it's the bomb shop, and the guy's selling a large ass bomb, and you have to buy the bomb, and it follows you. And you can't jump over ledges or anything like that. And you have to bring it all the way to this cracked part of the wall in the pyramid. And it's just another fairy fountain, and she gives you the silver arrows, which you need to beat Ganon. And then I think this is where you get your final upgrade for your sword as well. I could be lying. I'm not exactly sure.
I cannot correct you.
Only God can correct me.
Yep.
So, Link to the Past, really fun game. I want more. I like the design elements of it. I think I like top-down 2D Zelda games more than I like 3D Zelda games, just because they usually put more thought into the exploration, and it feels more like a puzzle adventure game rather than just like an action adventure game with the other games. Basically, they just kind of feel more action oriented in their combat. The combat's always way better in those, but in the 2D games, like this and like, what was the other one? Link's Awakening. You know, it's a little bit more about
Minish Cap.
Yeah. Oh my God. Minish Cap is, I think Minish Cap is my close second favorite. There's just,
yeah, it's among my favorites.
Yeah. There's definitely some polish that I would have liked to seen, like the whole Kenstone things, that gets old really fucking quick.
Really fast. Yeah.
Which it's like needed in order to unlock certain parts of the game too. It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, Minish Cap is also it's probably my second favorite Zelda game. And I would really like to see a new original Zelda game in the top-down world, not a remake like Link's Awakening, and not like a reimagining like a Link Between Worlds. I would like to see an actual full-on new game with,
and not like a kind of mini side game like Triforce Heroes.
Yeah, I would like a full-fledged game. It'd be awesome to kind of see them return to their actual roots and give us, you know, something that's like, here's this world and, you know, get at it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I think, you know, Breath of the Wild is their attempt to split the difference. It has a lot of the sensibilities of 2D where it's just fun to explore, but it's got like the 3D combat and blah, blah, blah. It's kind of them splitting the difference, but it's not quite scratching that itch. I would definitely say that A Link Between Worlds is like an awesome game in its own right, even though it's in the same world. A lot of the things you do are different. So that was my like really good 2D top-down experience was A Link Between Worlds. And there's just something that it captures that Breath of the Wild or any other 3D Zelda definitely can't.
Word. Zach, you got anything to add?
No, not really.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Tombstone Podcast. I hope you're enjoying our Legend of Zelda recap stuff where we go through all of our favorite games. I hope this kind of encourages you to go pick up some of these games and play them. There's a reason why Legend of Zelda has been going for, what, 30 plus years now? Almost 40 years now?
A little over 30.
Yeah, since like 88 or 89. There's a reason why these games have been around for so long, and they're classics, and everyone's so excited for them. But please drop us a review on Apple Podcasts and wherever you want to talk to us. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Bebo, we're on whatever else you want to find us. Thank you so much, and see you later, boys.
See ya.